Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 19th of February. And Paul Krugman is our guest, the first part of our program today. He's written recently on the minimum wage. He has also said that slashing government spending would destroy jobs, and this is not the time to do that. I want to ask him, how much money are major corporations sitting on right now? We heard reports not that long ago that it was a lot of money. What would it take to make them release some of that money and hire people? Is the economy so uncertain that major corporations are justified in holding on to billions of dollars? We'll be welcoming phone calls for Paul Krugman, the first part of our program today. Let me give you our phone number in Milwaukee because we'll go to phone calls rather early. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And as you know, we're in our winter pledge drive. And for those of you who pledge this hour, you can become fully informed on all things economic because we are offering End This Depression Now, Paul Krugman's latest book, for those of you who can pledge to us for $120. That pledge number, keep that in mind all hour long, 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, and we're happy to send you a copy of his new book. Paul Krugman is our guest this hour. He joined the New York Times in 1999 as a columnist on the op-ed page and continues as professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. He is the author or editor of 20 books and also has edited a number of columns. He is a Nobel Prize winning person, and we're delighted to have him with us. Paul Krugman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with this sequestration, which we have heard a great deal about. You have written that slashing government spending would destroy jobs. It is not the thing to do right now. How do we avoid that from happening? And why are we talking about that if the outcome is what you say it would be?
Well, the way to avoid having it happen is just don't do it. Right? We don't. There is no immediate budget crisis. The U.S. government is not having any trouble borrowing money. In fact, it can borrow it more cheaply than pretty much at any time in its history. So right now is the time to keep spending. And it's a sad commentary on where we are, that the discussion is really, well, how can we cut something else instead of the things that are in the sequestration, or how can we pay for this? We actually, at the moment, shouldn't be paying for it at all. That said, we could do worse than we could do better than what's about to happen, even within that constraint. But it's this is crazy. It's fundamentally crazy. And the reason we're there is a combination of political struggle, but also just bad ideas. A lot of people inside the Beltway got convinced, one way or another, that somehow or other the budget deficit, as opposed to incredibly high unemployment, was the biggest problem facing America, and they lost sight of what it is we really should be doing right now.
And those people who believe that have been able to define that issue, Paul Krugman. Why is that?
I think there's a couple of things going on. One is it's politics, of course.
Right.
If you think about what is the whole arc of the conservative movement in America these past 30-plus years, it has been, well, we're going to cut taxes, starve the beast. What does that mean? It means that when there comes a time then when there's a budget deficit, you say, oh, we have a budget deficit, we have to slash Medicare and Social Security. So, they've been planning for this fiscal crisis for 30 years. They're not going to give up on it. They're going to insist it's a crisis no matter what the bond market might be saying. But the other thing is a lot of people who think of themselves as centrists or just responsible, balancing the budget sounds responsible. It sounds good. It's a way to say that you're serious. It's very, very difficult to get those people to face up to the notion that, hey, there are times when that is not, in fact, the responsible thing to do. In fact, it's deeply irresponsible. They go by how it sounds rather than by actually analyzing.
When will we be facing, you talk about no immediate budget crisis. When will there be a budget crisis?
Well, we have a long-term issue of how do we pay for the things we want. And if you ask me what the there are decisions that will have to be made. If we try to think about how we're going to be managing our government and managing our society in the year 2025, there are some tough choices to be made. The main thing about the main dividing line is that when the economy is depressed, when there is a fundamental insufficiency of demand, when the private sector is still trying to pay off the debts it ran up in the bubble years, that's a really bad time for the government to be cutting back, too. So the real point at which we need our policy needs to turn is the point when the private sector has recovered sufficiently that the public sector can cut without sending the economy back into recession. And we'll know that. We'll see it very clearly in the unemployment rate. We'll see that when the unemployment rate is down to something substantially below here, something like more like 6% than 8%. And when there are, you know, starting to be signs that the economy is actually starting to overheat and the Federal Reserve is considering raising interest rates, that's a time when you can say, okay, now's the time for us to have some fiscal austerity so that we can trade off. We can let the private sector pick up the slack as the public sector cuts back, but not now.
Professor Krugman, can you give me an update? I was just astounded when I read these figures, maybe about a year ago, the billions of dollars that major corporations are kind of sitting on. I don't know where that money is. Most of us realize that that money, if it were infused in the economy, could help create jobs and make people better off. Where do we stand with all of that money? People are saying that they don't know which way the economy is going, and so they're unsure. They want to hold billions of dollars. Is it still...
Trillion.
It's trillions of dollars. Sorry, I don't know the difference.
Trillions, they're just giant numbers.
Yeah.
But there's really. Let me say first of all that there. I hate the use of this word uncertainty. It's not the problem. Is not that corporations are uncertain about the economy. It is that they expect the economy to be depressed for a long time. So they call it uncertainty, but what it really means is that it's not that it might be great and it might be terrible. It's that they don't expect it to be very good. And you wouldn't expect them to be spending a lot on hiring people. Why expand your capacity? Why expand your workforce if you are not using the capacity and the workforce you have right now, and you don't expect that to change anytime soon? So it's really the depressed state of the economy is the main story here. And the way to get corporations to want to expand is to end this depression now, is to have the government do what it should be doing and help support the economy during this difficult time, not cut back. There is another issue, which is that we've seen a big increase in the share of our national income going to profits. That's quite recent. In the last dozen years or so, there's been a big shift away from labor to profits. And corporations, you know, they're making a lot of money. They're not, by and large, handing it back to investors. They're certainly not handing it to workers in the form of higher wages. And that's one of the things that is helping to drag the economy down. So that's on top of the general problem of a depressed economy.
So where is that money going?
Well, it's sitting, a fair bit of it's overseas in overseas accounts, but it's also domestic. But it's the question just generally, where is money going in our economy? A corporation piles up a bunch of money in short-term safe assets, bought those assets from somebody else, that person or institution puts the money in a bank. The bank accumulates reserves. We have, you know, banks are sitting on vast amounts of reserves because they don't see good loans to make. So it doesn't really matter exactly where it is. The point is that corporations are not spending, and that is, but they're not spending mostly, that's mostly a symptom of our weak economy rather than a cause.
Paul Krugman is our guest, and we're welcoming phone calls. I want to ask him briefly about the minimum wage, and then we will go to you. So I would think it's a good time to call in. 800-486-8655 is our call-in number, 800-486-8655. You wrote recently, Professor Krugman, that raising the minimum wage is actually good policy because?
Well, first of all, we would like low-wage workers to make more money. And the normal economist thing is, okay, but you can't just legislate a higher wage because that will reduce demand and people will have fewer jobs. But that's a question that needs to be addressed with data. We have a lot of evidence now, and it just doesn't show. And it looks as if in the range where we're talking about, I mean, I think every economist would agree that if we tried to set a $25 minimum wage, we would have really, really we would have problems. But where we are right now, where minimum wages adjusted for inflation are very low by historical standards, doesn't seem to be an issue. It seems as if the given the way that labor markets work, given the way that major employers actually probably limit their employment to keep wages down, actually just saying, okay, you can't do that, if anything, leads them to hire more workers, not less. So the downside doesn't seem to be there. The upside, aside from the fact that that workers will earn more money is it actually reinforces other policies. So we have a policy, the Earned Income Tax Credit, that's meant to help low-wage workers,
yes,
which is a very good policy. I'm very much for it, but some of the money that the government spends ends up not going to the workers. Some of it ends up going to the employers, which is, you know, dilutes the impact of the policy. So if we say, well, let's raise the wage that workers, that employers have to pay, that actually helps that policy as well. So taken all together, all the evidence suggests there's really no significant downside. You can help a lot of people who really need to, who are working, who are doing their best, but really could use some more income. This looks like a really good policy move.
We're talking with Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize-winning economist, op-ed columnist for the New York Times, this part of our program. We're also in our winter pledge drive, so may I ask you for your contribution. $120 only this hour, and we'll be delighted to send you a copy of Paul Krugman's latest book, End This Depression Now. Let's go to some phone calls. Pat in Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
What we're missing, you know, on the minimum wage point real quickly is you know, a large percentage of the minimum wage are part-time high school, college students, very few wage earners for the family. And, you know, as our social security net, you know, and our safety programs stand right now, if you're not making between $35,000 and $40,000 a year, it doesn't pay to work. And that's a problem, and that's a lot of what we're seeing. You know,
okay.
Secondly, you know, I've been reading Paul Krugman's articles in the Journal Sentinel, and I know, you know, he's on the left side of the political aisle in the New York Times, but it's been the same version, or it's been a different version of the same article, which is increasing government spending will lead to economic prosperity.
All right, let's get a response.
Okay. So, first of all, it's just not true. Turns out that teenagers are very much a minority of minimum wage workers. It just, this is a myth that people have that it's only about helping teenagers, and it's just not true. And anyone who says that our system doesn't pay to work should be looking at what the actual benefits are that are available if you're unemployed or if you're not working. We do not have a generous social safety net. We actually, you actually look at what you have to live on. You look at what unemployment insurance pays. You look at how big the benefits from food stamps really are. They are not something very many people would choose voluntarily to live on. So this is really kind of a slander of hardworking American families who just, for a variety of reasons, lack of formal education, just bad luck, are not able to earn the kind of wage that would allow them to have a middle class status. And so, you know, it's just not true. It's deeply unfair to a lot of very needy people. Very needy people who are doing their best.
Let's go to Brad. Brad is in Eau Claire. Hi, Brad.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
I would like Paul to address, like, how much money that we spent on the stimulus programs for this recession and compare it to, like, the Depression in 1929 and maybe, like, include World War II spending in there a little bit.
All right.
Okay, so at its peak, the stimulus, the Obama stimulus, was running at about a little over 2% of gross domestic product, so which is the total value of stuff produced in this economy. And that was partly tax cuts, so the actual spending component was less than that. But that was sort of at the peak. I think if you want the relevant comparison, you want to actually look at not, of course, in World War II, the U.S. government was spending, you know, 40% of GDP on the war. But that's kind of a misleading, you know, that was extreme. In a lot of ways, the interesting thing is what happened before Pearl Harbor. Because as a lot of people have said, the U.S. economy went to war quite a while before the U.S. Army and Navy went to war. And we had an increase in military spending of around 10% of GDP, which brought the U.S. economy back to full employment, ended the Great Depression. We were out of the Great Depression before Pearl Harbor. So if you want, we're looking at something now that is maybe a quarter, that at its biggest was maybe a quarter of what it actually took to get out of the Great Depression. And, of course, the stimulus is mostly behind us now. All of the temporary spending increases on things like aid to state and local governments have gone away. There's still a little bit of the infrastructure projects, but there was never very much of that in the plan to begin with. So just fell way, way short of what we actually did to get out of the Great Depression.
We'll ask Paul Krugman if we need another, and in our wildest imaginations, could that ever happen? Paul Krugman is our guest, Nobel Prize-winning economist, op-ed columnist for The New York Times, and we're welcoming phone calls for him. We'll take more in just a little while. 800-486-8655 is our number. We've been enjoying the conversation with Paul Krugman, and we've been talking about the minimum wage, about the stimulus, about spending cuts, about historical stimulus in this country and what has been the effect of this. Later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Laura Dresser, who's Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, about economic issues facing Wisconsin. First, we need to take just a few minutes to ask for your help, for your support of the programs you enjoy. Listeners, help pay the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our winter membership drive, and Dean Kallenbach is with me. We're asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now and make a gift in support of all these programs you count on.
And last hour, the goal was 270 pledges. We heard from 236 listeners, so thanks for those pledges. Our goal this hour, 55 pledges, so meeting that goal helps make sure Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to pay for the programs you rely on, programs like this one with Kathleen Dunn. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help us meet that goal.
You have probably found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've heard one of our shows, and it's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You hear all kinds of points of view. You value what you hear on the Ideas Network, so please pledge your support. Here's how you do it, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the deal is you give to Wisconsin Public Radio to support these programs that you hear, but as an added incentive this hour, we do have something special for you. You can get End This Depression Now, which is Paul Krugman's book, when you give at $120. That's $10 a month. So ask for it now when you make your pledge, and that's done at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
When you make your pledge, you know that you can count on getting reliability, value, marvelous guests. We're reliable. We've been here for decades. And decades.
Yeah. Some of us have been here for decades.
And there's no end in sight.
and we are a great value. You can turn on the radio at any hour of the day or night and hear something interesting and learn something new. And you get to decide how much you pay. So invest in this great service now by choosing the amount you want to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
After paying your bills, we know that it may not be easy to find anything extra. That's why it's up to you to decide how much to give. Really, any donation makes you a member of WPR when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And it's not how much you give. It's not as important as the fact that you do give.
And that's a particularly pertinent point considering the topic of our hour. You know, giving to WPR is a choice, and if you're in a position where you can make that sort of choice, you'll probably find that choosing to donate is actually kind of fun. Find out right now by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Some gifts are personal, like birthday or anniversary presents, but other gifts are meant to be shared, like a sustaining membership in Wisconsin Public Radio. When you give $5 or $10 a month as a sustainer, your gift helps keep the more than 200,000 people who listen every day informed and entertained. Become a sustainer today.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Dean Kallenbach, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift may be $5 a month, $10, or $100. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're trying to decide on the amount, this hour might be a good time for you to say, yeah, that $10 a month would be great, and I would also get the End This Depression Now book by Paul Krugman.
Exactly. This would be a very good thing to do, Dean. $120 or more. And the book, Paul Krugman is a deep thinker and much in demand, so it would be a good hour to pledge. The best way to support this intelligent source of news and information is by donating really whatever you can at WPR.org. Put your contribution to work right away. Make your pledge with your credit card.
And it takes very little time, maybe a minute, maybe two. And you'll be investing in a station that keeps you informed every single day. Mm-hmm. Your contribution, any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552 simply provides essential support for Wisconsin Public Radio.
You may want to think of your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment in your future listening. Mm-hmm. You give us 2 minutes of your time, your donation in any amount, and in return, you will get lots of great programs.
And you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And in just a few minutes, you'll have made a wise investment, and it's one that pays dividends every day throughout the year.
We're looking, Dean, for 47 more pledges in the next, how many minutes do we need here?
32.
Right. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 supports the programs that you count on.
Ask for End This Depression Now by Paul Krugman with your pledge of $120 or more. That's $10 a month. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you pledge, you may consider becoming a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews each year. You'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. It's easy to set up. It's a great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And to that point, Jerry of Menominee says, I've decided after 15 years of regular support, I should simplify and become a sustainer. Great advice, Jerry. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dean. Paul Krugman is our guest, and again, End This Depression Now for a $120 pledge. Let's go to more phone calls for him. Phil in Woodstock, Illinois. Hi, Phil.
Hi, good morning. Mr. Krugman, I'm a staunch independent who reads your column every day by way of the Tribune printing plants at the Freedom Center. I'm a small businessman, and I've been in business for 30 years and always had a bank loan. And the banker who owned my loan always said, my only fear is that the sun comes up in the morning because I know you're going to pay me. His bank was bought out by a larger bank, which had taken a government bailout. And now I'm told, even though absolutely nothing's changed, according to the new banker, that I'm an exceptional risk. I saw the Frontline episode that said the administration gave the banks money with no requirements of ever loaning anything to anybody. Want to know what your feeling is about this and what kind of drag it's having on the economy.
Yeah, it is worth saying that the administration, I mean, I was very critical of the policies. They basically lent money to the banks or bought bank stock, and most of it they're getting back. Not all of it, but it turns out it wasn't a huge giveaway to the banks, but it certainly could have been. And there was a lot of few strings attached lending the support of the banking system, even though the banks were the ones who got us into this mess. I think, as best we can tell, people like you are aware this is doing damage. Small businesses are still somewhat constrained. They're not the most of the financial market is more or less back to normal, but there's still a problem of lending. It is with small businesses. It's an interesting, I'd love to be able to put a number on this, but the story you're telling, where the growth of super banks, which has actually been encouraged by this process, that may well have disrupted some of the personal relationships that let banks know that some risks were, that looked bigger, you know, that things that looked like they might be problematic on paper weren't if you actually knew the people involved. So that may be an issue. I still think, well, let's put, there are a couple of things. One, it should have been a much stiffer deal. The banking system did need to be rescued, but the deal could have been quite a lot more favorable. I wanted at least one of the extremely weak big banks to be taken into public receivership, not put out of business, but there's no reason why stockholders should have gotten anything out of the deal. And so I wanted to see probably Citigroup temporarily taken to receivership, but they didn't do that. Should have had a lot more requirement that banks do provide mortgage debt relief, that they do additional lending. There's still some room, but not very much for that sort of thing now. So this was a missed opportunity, I think. And this is one of the places where you really can say that mostly this was not a problem of Congress. This was the administration being way too solicitous of the big bankers.
What did you think, Professor Krugman, of Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren's questioning of big banks last week? And is she going to make a big difference on this issue?
Well, I think it's very useful that she's there. I mean, in some ways, a lot of us, I was certainly one of those people who was very unhappy when she didn't get to run the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But in the end, having her outside the administration is going to matter. Now, nothing is going to make the Republicans do anything. But to the extent that there are these internal decisions being made within the Obama administration, having her outside as a force, as a critic, is, from my point of view, I think going to keep them, well, maybe not keep them honest, keep them from the all-too-common tendency to go easy on the bankers, because the bankers, you know, sound like they know what they're talking about, and they wear very well-tailored suits and tend to be very persuasive, unless somebody is out there saying, hey, wait a second, these guys are ripping us off.
Thanks, Phil, very much for your call. Lee in Cambridge. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Good morning. What a treat to talk to Dr. Krugman. Two things. There's economic opinions that are worth something, and there are others that aren't. Can you help provide some sort of guidelines as a professional in the field as to how a listener to any station can sort out the BS from the truth?
All right. Oh, there's boy. A great question.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, and I understand that that's a problem. It's, you know, and it turns out that, I mean, obviously, if someone has if there's no reason at all to believe that someone has expertise, then, you know, don't pay attention. If a congressman or somebody is just spouting, there's particularly if he or she says that everything that the experts say is wrong, then that's a very good reason not to take them seriously. Trouble is, there's plenty of people who have all the credentials in the world who have been saying things that are really, really wrong. I think the best guide right now, it means you have to do a little bit of homework, but people have made predictions. You do want to take a look at what people said. If there's somebody who is telling you all about the budget deficit and what it's going to do, and that person has a track record of having spent 4 or 5 years warning that interest rates are going to skyrocket any day now, or a warning that inflation was about to skyrocket any day now, then that's a good reason to discount that person. I wish it were, you know, I wish it were easier. I wish that it was that all of the opinions you read in major reputable newspapers, which is basically just the Times, I guess, at this point. but you know, I wish it was true that you could count on that being reliable stuff, but it's not. So you do have to. The burden on the citizen is pretty severe now. Fortunately, we do have this thing called the Internet, so it's actually quite easy to check.
Thanks, Lee, very much. It was a great question. Robbie in Milwaukee, hi.
Hey there.
Speak up, Robbie, please.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'll try to be a little louder.
All right.
So my question is I heard earlier on the show what seemed to me to be a couple of conflicting ideas. First, I heard that right now we're still in a little bit of an economic tight spot because the private sector is still working to pay off debts that it built up 12 years ago in the bubble. But then I heard that the private sector is sitting on billions and trillions of dollars and not hiring people. My question is, why don't they just use that billions and trillions of dollars to pay off their debts, and then we're supposedly out of this recession?
Okay, different people. If we're asking about the debt issues of the private sector, we're mostly at this point talking about households. So there are some corporations that are excessively indebted, but not a lot. By and large, the U.S. corporate sector is pretty flush, but U.S. families bought houses because everyone told them there was no housing bubble, because lending standards had been degraded. And so you have a situation where households are sitting, are own houses that have lost a lot of their value, but have all the debts they ran up to buy those houses. And so we have households pulling back. We also have people not buying houses. So home construction has really plunged. And then you have corporations who are not in their balance sheets are fine, but they see no reason to expand their capacity, given that there is no consumer demand and that there's no there's no demand from the residential construction industry. And so that's the answer. It's not actually a contradiction. It's when I say private sector, I probably should say private sector part A, part B, because there really is a big difference here.
Paul Krugman, thank you ever so much for being with us and for all, and you make it all understandable to us too, which a person like me appreciates, sir.
I always think of that famous Alan Greenspan line. That's talking about someone who didn't do that. But if, Senator, if you think you understood what I was saying, you misheard. So I try not to sound like that.
That's a good philosophy. Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize-winning economist and op-ed columnist for The New York Times. So how's the state of Wisconsin faring? What about the creation of 250,000 jobs? What about unemployment? What about long-term plans to create jobs that the governor has outlined? We'll talk about that as we continue looking at the economy this hour. A reminder, for $120, we are delighted. I know that many of you are big fans of Paul Krugman. In this depression now, we will be happy to send that to you. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Dean Kallenbach. Listeners provide the single largest source of funding for WPR. And this is our winter membership drive. You can give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're looking for 38 pledges in the next 21 minutes. Certainly doable. Thank you if you've already given. And if you haven't, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I've always thought the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio is like this statewide town hall. Mm-hmm. It's where people come together to hear about topics, issues they care about, to ask questions, to share information.
And because you benefit from this community of civil discourse, we're asking you to help pay for it. Your support, very important part of what it takes to make the Ideas Network possible. Be part of this great tradition with your gift at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
And just a reminder that you can choose End This Depression Now, Paul Krugman's latest book, as your thank you gift for your pledge of $120, which is $10 a month or more. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you will enjoy the book. Make your pledge now, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552.
Substance, quality, these are things that it's a reputation that we've built here at WPR, and your contributions have gotten us to that point. Your pledge today will make this kind of strength, take this kind of strength into the future.
Your dollars give Wisconsin Public Radio the means to keep that quality and substance that you count on in our programs every single day. Pledge your support now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Why not make it easy on yourself? Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and become a sustainer. Choose a monthly amount that's right for you, say $10, $15 a month. Have a charge from your bank account or do like I do. Take it out of your credit card.
And when you are a sustainer, your monthly installments will continue year after year, so your support is always current.
Right.
As a sustainer, you'll automatically be entered in all of our statewide sweepstakes and drawings. So become a sustainer now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm John White. Let's talk about public radio. I've been listening to public radio for about 15 years. Civil discourse makes public broadcasting all the more valuable because it sifts out the noise, the anger, and agenda setting of commercial media. That's why public radio is my source for the gold standard in fair and honest discussion.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I like his phrase, civil discourse, which is what happens here. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Dean Kallenbach, asking for your support of the WPR programs that you count on. And we do want to thank you in advance for your gift of $5 or $10 or $30 a month or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And that $10 a month gift for this hour You can get that End This Depression Now book by the author we were just listening to, Paul Krugman. That's a pledge of $120 for the year or $10 a month.
Maybe giving a dollar a day is the right amount for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. And when you think about it, a dollar a day is a great value.
That comes out to about $30 a month, which you can set up as monthly transfers from your bank account or, again, as credit card installments.
Any way you do it, we'll make it convenient for you. Make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Every day you tune in here and hear Kathleen ask questions, here are some questions for you to think about when deciding to donate to Wisconsin Public Radio. A, what's WPR worth to you? B, how much do you listen over the course of a week, a month, a year? How long? How much? And then how much do you pay per month for things like cable and movies, which you might use less or do less, and yet you're willing to pay to spend that time? What's your time worth here?
Yeah, it's a good question. Good questions. At WPR, you get to choose how much you give, and any contribution will make you a member. So please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Still needing about 35 more pledges, and we have 17 minutes to get there. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 supports the programs you count on.
And please remember, this is only this hour. Ask for In This Depression Now by Paul Krugman with your pledge of $120 or more, and that's $10 a month. So please pledge now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Sustaining gifts, easy to set up, a great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. Automatically renews each year. You'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly premiums. So please consider being a sustainer, and you choose how to give. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We hear, Dean, from so many people who say, my commute is made so much more interesting by your programming. The time goes fast.
I was in the car 4 hours yesterday. It was much fun, you know.
There you go.
Just want to stay there.
And Regina from Green Bay says, I commute an hour each day to and from work, and I feel informed both on the state and national level because of the news that you provide. Thanks for making my time on the road worthwhile.
Donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support to WPR.
Yeah, thanks ever so much. We're going to find out the state of Wisconsin's economy next with Laura Dresser, so stay with us. So the question of the remaining part of the hour is, what is the status of not just Milwaukee's, but the whole state of Wisconsin's economy, and what is the future? And what about Governor Walker's plan that he presented about a week ago, wanting to invest nearly $100 million in programs to develop the state's workforce, including grants to train residents for high-demand professions, and also a requirement for nearly 76,000 people on food stamps to enroll in job training programs. Laura Dresser is joining us now. Laura Dresser is Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy. She's a labor economist and an expert on low-wage work and workforce development systems, and she has written about ways to build stronger labor market systems. We'll welcome a few phone calls for her if you'd like to join this conversation. Here's how you do so. 800-486-8655 is our number. Laura Dresser, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the state of Wisconsin's economy and the creation of jobs. We have heard that Governor Walker has fallen short of the number of jobs that he would like to create, and he came up with this plan to invest money to develop the state's workforce. Where are we in terms of job creation, and do you feel hopeful that that announcement will move us to the creation of more jobs in Wisconsin?
Well, I think the first and dominant fact is that we are well behind where we should be in terms of jobs. This has been, as Paul Krugman was pointing out, a very weak national recovery. The job, largely jobless, very weak job growth. But Wisconsin has been left out of even the weak job growth that we've had at the national level. So Wisconsin remains today still, 150,000 jobs behind where it was in 2007. If you count for the population growth since then, we're another 70,000 jobs behind. So the target of 250,000 jobs is as relevant today as when Scott Walker first called out that number, it was a pretty good number to identify. But the fact is that Wisconsin actually isn't even as growing as fast as the national economy. Wisconsin is very stagnant and among the worst states in the nation in terms of job production.
And Laura, when you answer the question, why is that? What do you say?
Well, I think it's a very hard why is that. There are a number of reasons, but I don't think there's a single silver bullet. Clearly, we've had a kind of approach to austerity in the state that has taken money out of public sector worker pockets, and that has put, you know, less money throughout the state. The state budget had to be balanced, so that money was, you know, that deficit had to be dealt with 2 years ago. But if it was a more balanced approach of both, wage concessions and some tax increases or revenue sources, we could have had a different result in terms of general demand. We also turned away money. There were specific government decisions that I think contracted the economy, but not to the extent that would explain how far behind we are. I think we also see weakness in Wisconsin in terms of business willingness to invest. The business services sector is very weak, which is kind of indicator of people's willingness to hire on people, because that's where temp agencies are and that's where people start their hiring. And leisure and hospitality is weak in Wisconsin, and I think that's consumers sitting back as well. So I think we see weakness a lot of places, in the public sector, but in other places as well. And to explain why we sit so far outside of what the national picture is, that's some of what I know, but I don't think it adds up to a single silver bullet.
The governor is presenting a budget tomorrow, and let's look at one of these components, talking about getting people to work and stimulating the economy. He's looking to tie funding for technical schools and universities to filling high-demand jobs, although he has been criticized for not that long ago cutting funding from technical schools. Is there a need to train people for the jobs that are available? Will this infusion of money help do just that?
You know, I believe firmly we have the state technical college system, and of course our education system across the board from kindergarten to the highest levels has always been a critical piece of infrastructure in the state, and needs investment and has suffered during these downturns. Yes, you know, it's important to see some of those investments. No, they probably don't make up the difference that was lost. And yeah, it's good. It's good to pay attention to high demand jobs and getting workers connected to where demand is. So I believe, you know, I think that's a good thing. I don't think this is going to change our job trajectory, overnight. And some of the other things going on in the budget probably undermine the long term growth perspective.
And what about education policies? We heard this announcement yesterday about more funding for voucher schools. Have schools and cuts in school funding, and now we see a change in more money for voucher schools, but public schools are still suffering from cuts. How does that play into the whole economic picture, or is it too soon to know what will happen to these young people?
Well, to me, the real economic picture that a governor builds is the long-term economic picture. You know, billboards and trying to attract businesses from other states. I mean, governors are always going to do that, and they're always going to pretend that they control the job count today. But what governors really control is the long-term, the sense of public infrastructure from schools to roads to rails to broadband, the sense that you have a place you want to live with parks and museums and services and clean lakes. Those things really matter in the long run. That's the long-term economic infrastructure that that attracts good workers for businesses, that attracts businesses to a state, that helps businesses grow. And that's where I have the biggest concerns about the state. Shifting money out of the public schools, as we have seen, when we know that kids in the schools are more stressed, there's more kids qualify for free and reduced lunch today than 10 years ago, nearly twice as many in the state. We know the schools are more stressed. We know they have less resources to deal with the kids who come with less, you know, food and sleep and stability in their lives. And we defund the schools and move money into voucher programs. I feel like that's a long-term shift away from a kind of strong economic infrastructure. I worry that's that's where my worry is.
Laura, thank you very much. Our time was brief. We need to have you on for a full hour, and we'll do that down the road in the not-too-distant future. Laura Dresser, Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, talking about Wisconsin's economic future and also the governor's plans that will be in the budget, which we'll hear more about tomorrow. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. We have so much going on this hour. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Dean Kallenbach, and we are here to ask you to invest 2 minutes of time to support your future WPR listening. Who else is going to give you in-depth conversations on these kinds of issues that are so important to our lives? A contribution of any amount will be so much appreciated. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember that it's WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to help pay for the programs you depend on. Now, we're looking for 29 pledges. Wow, we've got a little work to do.
We do, I know.
We can do that, though. 29 pledges in the next five plus minutes. And we need you to make your donation now, though, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you've been enjoying the conversation with Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman discussing the minimum wage and the deficit and why we should put off spending cuts, and also with Laura Dresser, Associate Director of the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, about economic issues facing Wisconsin. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift that works for you, then make your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, we've spent the last couple of hours talking about money, of course, this hour, and Kevin McKinley before, and we talk about money a lot on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's an important thing to talk about, not only but not in the way a lot of the world talks about money. I think it's more trying to be thoughtful and understanding what money represents. You get to decide the amount of your pledge. You know, we don't want to dictate to you, you have to give this much in order to be a member. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. But if you're trying to figure out an amount for you, for this hour, consider asking for End the Depression Now. It's a thank you gift this hour when you give $120. That's $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And it is, I want to take a moment just to say it is an honor for me to be with you this morning. I was on the search committee that recommended hiring Kathleen Dunn a few years ago.
Oh, my gosh, 20 years
this
year, actually.
It was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And we were very excited because we were able to bring in this host with experience speaking to Wisconsin, experience talking about Wisconsin issues, but it was a voice, a youthful, enthusiastic, energetic voice, and boy, that's just continued for 20 years. And it's so much fun to be sitting in the room with you and talking not only with you but with your listeners. You don't get a show like this anywhere else, and this show is possible. Pledge by pledge, only on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Show your support now, and I'd encourage you to show your support with a little note talking about how important Kathleen Dunn is to you. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, you're very kind, Dean, and you really are. You're very kind. Maybe you're interested in playing a larger role in support of WPR. You can do so. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR programs. Leadership Circle members value the compelling public radio programming that so many people in our communities rely on. If they want to make sure that it's going to be here today and tomorrow and for all who listen. If you'd like to increase your support to WPR, join the 9XM Leadership Circle. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.